back.
Sorry, Norman, I can't hear you. Hello?
There's a train coming. You don't need no ticket. You can just step on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesel humming. You don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord.
Oh, how about a round of applause for Linda Jones, ladies and gentlemen, on Papa.
You are listening to Diasporic Music. We would like to apologize for the technical glitch. I don't know what the situation was. Maybe it's the state doesn't want people to hear what is taking place in Toronto. But could you I don't know exactly where you were. I guess we could reiterate. You were talking about you guys have regrouped and you're trying to get on the good foot again.
Sorry?
I say you're trying to get, you guys are trying to get back on track right now. The summer,
yeah.
Everything's back in order for September.
So what we're trying to do is really focus in on working with the student members who are part of our organizing because according to CHRY board rules, students are the only members of the radio station because it is a community campus radio station. So that's where we're kind of focusing our energies right now is trying to work with student activists on the York University campus to see what we can do to bring the management of CHRY to account, to make them answer to the student body with what they're doing with the mandate of the station, really.
And what are they playing right now? How is musically, we have a station called G98.7. They claim to be addressing the community's needs. Musically, they play in a wide variety. They do an excellent job musically, I think, but spoken word, they're weak. How would you compare what's taking place at CHRY musically and spoken word wise to G98.7?
Well, I think, I mean, from the way that I can see it, CHRY somehow has gotten in their mind that they're in competition with G98.7. And just to clarify, right, G is a commercial radio station. It might purport itself in being community or community-based. It is a commercial radio station. It has a commercial radio license, and it has different rules in terms of the content that they need to play, the amount of time they can allow for ads, and generally their mission is different, right? They're a community station. I mean, they're a corporate radio station, and so their mission is to make money. CHRY, on the other hand, does not have that as its mission. Its mission is to be the voice of the voiceless. Its mission is to open up spaces for community to have access to the airwaves. So you would expect that their programming would be different. And for 25 years, it was. CHRY was a place for community members to take to the airwaves, to talk about what was going on in the community, to play music from their various community groups. So it was providing that kind of diversity. It was providing a certain type of autonomy in terms of programming, in terms of what you heard. So you would hear, I mean, like, you know, music, for example, that I'm not really into, Norman, but I know that you know the history of. Stuff like you're not going to hear in the Canadian, in Toronto airwaves, like Calypso, for example. you're not hearing that anymore, right? So the programming has changed. If you were to ask me to describe what it was, I would say the music was mainstream hip hop and jump up soca. That's all they seem to be playing. And I'm not listening so often, but this is my sense of what I hear, and that's exactly the kind of music that G plays. This G98 corporate radio station. So you really do hear a corporate sound. And they are definitely moving away from their mandated music. So the CRTC, which is the governing body of radio and television in Canada, mandates that community stations need to play a certain amount of Canadian content. I don't know what it is. I haven't really counted what they're playing, but I can hazard to guess that 15% of their Canadian content is Drake. Like, it's that mm-hmm. kind of shit, you know? So they really are moving away from a diverse sounding of music, even though they think that they're not. I say that, I mean, because you made the comparison to G, they're just picking up G's garbage, right? So G, for example, let go of Dr. J, or Dr. J decided to leave, or whatever, a big soca DJ in the city. He's now at CHRY, right? So it's really this mentality that they think they're in competition with G. And I think that that goes down to... you know, the reason, I mean, I'm still trying to comprehend the reason why they did what they did. And, you know, they didn't tell us. So all I can do is hazard to guess. And they seem to think that we're in competition with with corporate radio. Like, they, right. being the management, do not understand even the tenets of campus community radio. So that is the fundamental issue. And moreover, in terms of the sound, I think what's really important to note is that when CHRY was a community station, when there were community voices, you would hear lots of DJs that are not professional DJs, right? So they would be, you know, and for the most part, a lot of women. It would give a space for women to play music. I'm not too sure how it is in the States, but in Canada, being a DJ is rough for women. Clubs and, you know, parties and weddings and stuff like that are really misogynist spaces, especially for female DJs. I have a few female DJ friends who are like, it's ruthless. You'll go to a party or go to a club, and it just the abuse that you have to suffer from men who just think that because you're a female DJ, you're up for grabs is disgusting, right? So that community radio gave a space for women who love music to be able to play the music they love, to be able to play the music from their communities. And I'm talking a diverse, range. I can think of two DJs off the top of my head. One that plays Caribbean Creole, French Creole music.
You're talking
and
about
one
Paula.
That plays, I'm talking Paula. About Paula. Yes, I am. Right. And I'm talking about also Veda, who used to play Indo-Caribbean music. Both
Indo-Caribbean.
Them,
Indo-Caribbean,
yeah,
okay.
Indo-Caribbean, like Chutney music.
Right.
Chutney music, bhajans, Bollywood, stuff like that, but mostly Indo-Caribbean music, right? And they were part of the kind of sweep of CHRY, as everyone was. Everyone was kicked off and then given this BS about being invited to come back and play the music. One of those two DJs did try to go back, and she was told that she could be a swing host. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's basically announcing the song that someone else is playing. So basically,
wait, that's like reading the national news on a working for a Warner Brothers or somebody, right? Yeah.
Exactly, and that's what she was told. So no longer can she be the curator of music. She needs to just announce what a man is playing now. So do you see what I'm saying? That curatorial liberty that she had to choose music, and she was very conscious about the music show she chose.
Hold it for a second. So you're saying that here's a woman, and a man is going to choose the music, and she's just going to
announcing.
Say what? Announce what? That's It is kind of that's kind of Fred Flintstone-ish, I think, isn't it?
Right. So this, I mean, this example demonstrates. It's a very small example, but it's not an isolated example. It just demonstrates where the music and where the community is being placed in this new mandate of CHRY, right? There is no interest for diversity at all. What they want and who they're promoting are these big professional DJs. They don't get paid, so it's still under their community license. They do not get paid to be on air, but if they are DJs by profession, you know, if someone hears them on radio, me like, I'm going to hire them for my next jam. I'm going to hire them to play at my club. I'm going to hire them to play at this wedding or whatever, right? So they don't make money for going on air, but it's part of the work that they do, right? And
right.
And a community space shouldn't be a space to promote these big, big city DJs. Like Dr. J is a huge, I mean, he deserves a space on air, but he's a huge city DJ. He doesn't need to have a community radio station to give him that space. That is not the space for him. It is the space for women DJs, like I'm telling you about. For example, I'm not saying that it should only be women on the air, but like this gives you a good example, right, of what I'm trying to say in terms of what community space means, right? So these two women now have no access to the radio airwaves. From what I know, there are no Franco Caribbean or Creole shows on the air anymore in Toronto because Paula is no longer on CHRY. So it's eliminated so much of this type of music. The chutney music that's being played now is by another really big DJ in the city, right? So it's really reducing, and there was like a big consciousness in the way that Veda was playing Indo-Caribbean music. Let me give you an example. You know, it's very historically grounded. The music that she chose to play very consciously was not Daru music. So Daru music is like music about rum, right? Like music about getting drunk, music about, you know, it's very kind of misogynist Indo-Caribbean music. And she made a very conscious choice not to play that type of music, right? Because Indo-Caribbean history is really rooted in the colonial search for sugar, right? This is the reason that there were slaves. This is the reason that there were indentured laborers to the region. And then there was this kind of abuse of alcohol, this kind of systemic alcoholism that grew in the community, and the type of music that grew with that too, that later became this kind of really abusive, misogynist music. And so she took a really conscious choice not to play that kind of Daru music. But now the DJ that is playing chutney music doesn't have that kind of community consciousness that she did, and he's playing all this type of really music that, you know, other women, for example, even men, I'm sure, take a very conscious reflection on. So this is the space. You asked about the music, and I know I gave you a really long answer, but I think it's important to recognize the way that these kinds of progressive, conscious spaces, even in music, are being reduced in the city of Toronto, and surely across the United States. I mean, we can learn from, you know, the example of whatever happened at Pacifica, for example, right? Like, I mean, my American friend says that, oh, you know, you Canadians are 10 years behind in terms of your community radio spaces being taken away. I mean, we see that history had happened also in the United States.
That's right. Well, let me say that you and I have worked together, and you know that you were talking about the type of music that I like. I'm a guy who likes... there's a song called I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles, and a group called Lakeside did it, I Want to Hold Your Hand, but they were saying, I want to hold your hand because I might fall, but that's, that is, I know you're not into the lovey-dovey stuff, but...
I keep on
making fun of you because, as a woman, you definitely are in a minority position. I keep on reminding you of that because... the love things are very popular among mostly women. But I wanted to change the subject and talk about spoken word. How are they doing this spoken word now? And is Alan Jones a part? Did he go with them, or is he still independent? Alan Jones was with G98, and he used to be with us at CKLN.
Yeah, and he used to be at CHLY as well, long way back. And then he went to CHLY.
Yes, correct, right.
And then he went back to, from what I've heard, he's back at Vibe. Vibe is the new incarnation of CHLY.
Oh, so he's there. I mean, okay, yeah.
I don't know. I would presume that he's there, but he was there when the station, kicked out all the volunteers. He was on the roster because I think he got into a fight with, what's his name? The guy who owns G.
Oh, Fitzroy Gordon.
Fitzroy, right? Yes. He used to be on that horrid excuse of a spoken word show called The Grapevine. Oh, my God, it's the worst shit I have ever heard. And I know a lot of people are listening, and that show is Norman, is just terrible. Like, the work that you did, for example, on the radio landscape in Toronto through Saturday Morning Live, really kind of, taking a very historical, cultural, conscious look at the Black community in the city, for example, was so important. And that just, that history, that foundation is completely being decimated by shit like The Grapevine. I mean, it is terrible. But that aside, CHLY was also a place where we had a diversity of spoken word radio shows. I'll give the example of my radio show called Amandala, an African Perspective, which we did start with you. You gave us the space on Saturday Morning Live at CKLN to do our half an hour show there. And then we moved to CHRY after what happened at CKLN, and we had an hour show. And it was the only place in Toronto and in the country, aside from our sister show, also called Amandala at CKUT, which is a community radio station in Montreal, that you were able to hear news about the continent, progressive, pan-Africanist perspective on what's going on on the continent. So it wasn't a diasporic show. It was very much this kind of like continental, real politics kind of show.
Right.
And it was a very important space, and we don't have that anymore. That is just not there. It is not there in Toronto. I don't know what the spoken word looks like right now in CHRY, but I can, bet my life it is not going to be the kind of, spoken word that we used to bring to the community airwaves, to the airwaves. There was a news collective that CHRY had called News Now that was, these young, amazing women of color who were students at York University who really took it on, really kind of reformulated it, made it more of a collective as opposed to, just daily one-off news shows. And we're working so hard, right, and wanted to do so much and approached the station saying, we want to change it like this, we want to change it like that. And they were said no. They weren't given the space to make these changes that they wanted to make because the station was planning this coup. So these are really... and I know the women that were doing this. These were young women of color who were students at York University.
Now,
let me just say one more thing. I was listening to CHRY the other day. The only spoken word I ever hear is it's funny. It's hilarious. It's these, like, news, international news, music news, and the big music news that they were announcing, that they were talking about was, I'm not kidding, was Bow Wow having signed a new contract to do a new album or whatever with Bad Boy Records. Like, this is the news. This is the important music news that needs to be shared on community airwaves. Bow Wow.
So it's not, they're not talking about the mining industry, Canada's mining in Africa, or the fact that there is an election taking place, a federal election taking place in Canada.
I don't think they got their voting card. I don't think they know. They didn't get their voting card. They have no idea there's an election coming on.
And there's no mention of the fact that there is a carding issue in Canada Canada, let me say this, Stephen Harper is on the wild, and he is he makes Obama looks like Salvador Allende politically. I mean, he is probably the most right-wing leader. Well, he's the most right-wing leader in the so-called democratic world. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, Norman, I completely agree. And you know what I always think about when I think about Stephen Harper? Is when Bush was still president of the United States and we got Stephen Harper. And you said it best, Auntie Gillen. You said that Harper is out-bushing Bush. Like, he is worse than Bush. And I use that line all the time. Like, if Stephen Harper was out-bushing Bush, like, you know he's pure madness, pure crazy. And I mean, these are the things that we need to be talking about on our community airways, because corporate radio is not going to talk about it. So what you hear now on CTY is snippets of music, snippets of news. So they have these like little pre-packaged, I swear to God, they did cut and paste from the CBC and the BBC, and they just mushed it all together and made a news headline kind of thing. There's no analysis. There's no in-depth analysis. There's no interviewing of, you know, people from the community. I did hear one interview, and it was like some professor talking about, I don't know, some book on I don't know what. But it's not community voices. And from what I've heard, they, you know, from the training that they're giving people to start up their news programming, and this is what I've heard, so I want to put it down that I was not there, that I didn't see it written down. This is rumors that I heard, was that they are not going to be allowed to interview anyone who's not a quote-unquote expert. So if you don't have credentials, like if you're not a doctor,
yeah.
You're not right, a doctor, right. You ain't getting on air. You don't have a right to an opinion. So if you're an activist, if you're part of the Black Lives Matter movement in Toronto, you are not going to be considered a valid voice to be interviewed on this Vibe crap.
So that means vibe. that a Bama like myself, that graduated high school with a D average, I couldn't be on there, right? I'm a dummy, right?
Not. Yep.
Right.
That's the way we roll. So this is what is happening to the space. The community spaces in Canada.
And how can people help and get involved in the movement to save CHRY?
So we have a bit of a ragtag group of people that are, you know, getting together to try. It's really hard to organize in this city. There's so many stakeholders, like I mentioned, right? There's the student body, who are ultimately the members of CHRY. There is, the administration of the university. There's the CRTC, which is the Canadian Radio and Television Commission, that regulates the license. They don't want to get involved. We contacted them. Then there's also Industry Canada. There's, so many violations of their nonprofit status that's going on right now, and their charitable status or whatever their status might be. So there's a lot, and then there's the community, the community, former programmers who are part of the community. So there's a lot of stakeholders that we are currently trying to juggle in a small group of people. But we are trying to update as much as we can our WordPress site, and it's Your Community Radio 1055 WordPress.com. Or look us up on Facebook or on Twitter. It's simple, Save CHRY. So look us up on your social media. And please do help us. We have petitions up. We're going to have, community outreach as well. So we really like to get that kind of support from the community. And, please, if you look on our website or any of our social media, you can also send us an email or a note of your support, and that would be really amazing.
We have about 2 minutes left. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I mean, I would just like to say that I would like to add that this is, we are looking at this in terms of radio, but it is a systemic, larger issue of people's voices being heard. I mean, it does sound kind of cliche, but that's what it is, right? There's like a reduction. Everywhere you see, there's a reduction of space in terms of community participation, right? It's nothing more than this kind of like neoliberal push. Like, it's part of it. Like, it's a corporatization of everything. everything we touch, the corporatization of school, the corporatization of news, the corporatization of healthcare. You know, we see it everywhere, and this is part of it. So it is, it's not, you know, a bunch of, oh, sorry, fat programmers lost their shows. No, that's not what it's about. It's about access, right? It's about community access to, you know, to airways, to health, to, like, the environment, to whatever, right? So that access is really being monopolized more and more by corporate interests.
All right, I would just like to say Asante Sana and thank you very. Oh yeah, you can speak. I forgot. Yeah, what am I? I forgot. Are you fluent in Swahili, or you can just?
Oh no, I wish you could just be
BS like me.
I can maybe do a bit more than you, but I'm a sorry excuse for a Tanzanian for sure.
Well, I studied Swahili with Maina Chinyati in Detroit. He was mm-hmm. teaching Swahili at the library of the YMCA in Detroit. Maina Chinyati was an ex, or is an ex. He's still alive, I think, and he did. He wrote the book on Lidan Kimathi and so on and so forth. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I'd like to. Mm-hmm. No, I could never pick it up.
All right, so I really appreciate you coming on the show, and we will bring you back to, because this situation is not going away.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I hope it would, but I don't see it going away in the near future. So I'd really like to thank you, Norman, for always being really supportive of us and always being, you know, you were a pioneer of community radio in Toronto, of Black radio, of Voices of Color, progressive radio. So we would like to thank you for allowing us to have that space. I mean, I learned everything I know about community radio from you. You were the first person or the only person to ever really teach me about community radio. So the space is possible because of people like you, because of people at CHRY who built CHRY for 25 years. And then one day being told by these punks that we don't need you anymore, right? So, I mean, that's what we're fighting for. We're fighting for that legacy.
All right, Ome Raham Tula, thank you very much. And you have been very consistent. And I know if Ome says she'll be there, she'll be there. And if she can't be there, she'll tell you she can't be there from the beginning. So,
so
I think you have been very, very consistent.
Thank you very much, Norman.
All right, take care. And we will see you in the whirlwind. All right.
Bye.
And we have been speaking with Ome Raham Tula of Grilla. And Diasporic Music continues on Uhuru Radio.
Black power in black community.
McKinney Clemente up in the Green Party. No disrespect, we need a red, black, and green party.
Informative.
How wealth gets redistributed is that the workers themselves come to power. The workers come to power, and then we redistribute the wealth, not the petty bourgeoisie.
No degrading lyrics. Finally, the station you've been looking for. Uhuru Radio. Uhuru Radio.
Our revolutionary aspirations could contend with the ruling class in this war of ideas.
No degrading lyrics.
I wish there was a video game to teach you your ancestor name.
Informative.
We welcome anybody who is about the liberation, the freedom of African people, and this is a part and parcel of that liberation and freedom struggle.
Finally, the station you've been looking for. Uhuru Radio.
You're listening to uhururadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Thank you.
Nanga Def. Nanga Def is Wolof, and Wolof is the language of many people in Senegal, Mauritania, and elsewhere. And Nanga Def is a greetings in Wolof. And we just listened to a group from the Kora Jazz Trio, and they did a song called Chan Chan, and they are members. They're a trio. Two members are from Senegal, and one member is from Guinea. And we're going to be paying shining the musical spotlight on the Kora Jazz Trio. But first of all, I wanted to let you know that the African People's Education and Defense Fund, an entity of the Uhuru Movement, is the primary owner of Black Power 96. And Black Power 96 is our radio, playing our music, telling our stories by us. All donations are tax deductible. You can also write checks or money orders payable to APEDF and remit to Black Power 96, care of APEDF, 1245 18th Avenue South, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33705. For further information, call 727-824-5700. That's 727-824-5700. Or you can email us at info@uhururadio.com. Thank you for continued support, and we are still raising money. We had our kickoff fundraiser for blackpower96.org on September 20th, and we are encouraging all listeners to Diasporic Music and all radio shows on Uhuru Radio to continue to support us. Right now, we're getting ready to play some great music from the Kora Jazz Trio. Now, there was a song called Now Is the Time by Charlie Parker, and this song was recorded by the Kora Jazz Trio. We're going to listen to three renditions of this song. We're going to hear the Kora Jazz Trio, their rendition. We're going to hear Charlie Parker's rendition. We're going to hear Eddie Jefferson's rendition. And we're going to hear a woman by the name of Vi Red. She's a sister, and she was Los Angeles, California based. And when Geronimo Gijaga Pratt was released from prison in Los Angeles, Vi Red was there, and she played when Geronimo was let out of prison. And Vi Red is a native of Los Angeles, and she went to a high school called Thomas Jefferson High School, which many revolutionary Africans and not so revolutionary, well, some reactionary Africans went to Jefferson High School, the most reactionary being Ralph Bunch. And Roy Ayers went there. Roy Ayers is on the song that we're going to play. Johnny Guitar Watson and many great musicians, athletes, thinkers, and so on and so forth. Alvin Ailey, the great dancer, yeah, he went to Jefferson High School. And then we're going to play a song, a song by Tito Puente, and it's the Kora Jazz Band featuring Andy Norrell. It's a Euro-American who plays steel pan. And we will be back with Bruce Dixon after that. So we will see you in the whirlwind. Thank you.
come reminisce with me and think about the bird. Remember everything he did and all the things you heard. Oh, don't adjust the measure, get you down inside. Think of how he had to live and then the way he died. Life was so unkind, cause now should have been his time. So be ba do da boo ba da do do slip a grab. Now there was a tune that it moved me, and there was a tune that really grooved me. Oh, yesiree, yesiree, when I heard the bird. And he was certainly making history down on 52nd Street. He was just for scratching his head and going on. You should have dug him. They're wondering how the yacht get no so fast on fast and swinging. Yes, sir, I'm sure the feet were really steady back away when he stopped to play Charlie Parker. A whole lot of soul, Charlie Parker. He's with life, he could sit around thinking masterpieces that he'd up right and play them. He was working city in a certain with a penny that never made lots of dough before he came time to go. But left a lot of swing in the air. Once you listen, play a Charlie boy. Go ahead and fill the people's hearts with joy. We love to listen. Oh yes, we love to listen to you, Charlie, did we do? Although we know you're gone, all the memories that you left behind shall linger on. Blow ahead, blow, blow, yes, blow your blues away. We listen to everything you ever play. Balance where your specialty, but on the blues you got so close to me. Hey, you were born to be a master of your horn. Glory to my boy. About the bird, remember everything you did and all the things you heard. Oh, don't adjust the measure, get you down inside. To think of how he had to live and then the way he died. Life was so unkind, cause now should have been his time. Now was the time. I never thought he'd be so awfully close to me until I heard his message and it up and set me free. It made me want to linger, want to hang around for better understanding of these different kind of sounds. Back in 42, Bird came to New York, and he blew my buddy blue.
A dog will have his day, but when it comes to wailing, dogs ain't got a thing to say. So they can do the waiting, cause I ain't hesitating. The future's round the corner, so for now I'm gonna play. Now's the time to wail, not later, but right now's the time. Thank you.
Johnson.
Je peux venir juste écouter le son un petit peu?
Ok.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. We just paid tribute to some musicians from Senegal and Guinea. I'm losing tripping now. And we played some Charlie Parker music, and we're getting ready to have a great discussion with Bruce Dixon. Bruce Dixon is the from Black Agenda Report. He was born and raised in, on the south side of Chicago. He was inspired by the example of his own father and that of the freedom movement in the U.S. of A and around the world. And he took part in organizing high school students in 1967 and 1968 and became a member of the Black Panther Party. He did a lot of work around tenant organizing and community organizing. And I would like to welcome Bruce Dixon of Black Agenda Report to Diasporic Music. How are you doing?
I'm doing better than a whole lot of folks, Norman. How about yourself?
Oh, I can't complain. I give it about a 7.
I think you should complain. I've been taught that the complaint is the start of the problem solving process. So we all should complain. That's what my daddy told me.
My mother told me the same thing, but I found out later, if you want to start a blues band, or a blues band, or more than that, if you want to start a political organization or a party, we can complain as long as we do that.
There you go.
Now, I guess the thing I wanted to ask you, you do a commentary on Black Agenda Report, and one of the reports said that you were not attending the march on Minister Farrakhan's march in Washington, D.C. Before we get into the meeting, what they were talking about today, why wouldn't you attend that?
Well, first of all, I want to wish a safe journey out there and a safe journey home to all those who do make it out there, but I'm not going. I didn't make the first one because, there's a lot of reasons, okay? The place that I started at the first one was that what was the march supposed to be about? The march, if you Google Million Man March and go to the NOI's own site, the theme of the march was atonement.
Right.
Not our differences with the people in power, okay, not better housing and education and jobs for everybody and stopping the insane imperial wars everywhere, but atonement. And who has to make the atonement? We do. Black men have to make the atonement. So then what you got here is, in the words of Brother Adolph Reed, is you had the largest group of black men ever to come together to protest themselves. And it just didn't seem reasonable for me to go and ride, 700 or 800 miles from Chicago to D.C. to go and protest myself. If I think myself has done something wrong, then, I probably go home and have a drink and sit down and think about it and maybe not do that thing again no more. But riding out to D.C. To atone, it just didn't seem right to me. And I had a moment of weakness on the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March. I almost went, but I thought the better of it and reconsidered and didn't go. And now this time, I'm sure I did the right thing both times, and I'm not going to be on the bus this time either. When you look at it, I remember when the brothers I knew who went to the first march came back. And I'm at work. I'm working for the county. I'm at work with some of these brothers, and I said, "Well, how was it?" And they told me how it was and how they all felt empowered and unified and everything. And I'm like, "All right, cool, But I used to be an organizer, and so I said, "Well, I know they took your names, didn't they? I know y'all part of the Million Man mailing list, right?" And they said, "Huh?" And I said, mailing list. Back then I was one of the few guys that had an email. We're talking 20 years ago. I had an email account 20 years ago. And these brothers that I was working with had email accounts too. And so I said, they'd ask for your email? They didn't ask for your phone number. They didn't ask for your address. And they said, no, they collected money, though. And so that kind of told me right there that this was about symbolism, you know, because any organizer knows that if you get three people together around the kitchen table or 30 people in a community center or 100 people, the first thing you do with those people is you get their digits so that you can assemble this crowd again, so that they can talk to each other and so that you can talk to them. That's organizing 101. And so then if the organizers of the Million Man March didn't do that, then they were not organizing for power. They were not organizing for mass action in any kind of way except to have their masses as a backdrop. And I don't want to be nobody's backdrop.
All right, now let's talk about reared in Chicago, but you are based in Atlanta, Georgia now, and you are getting ready. You're trying to get the Green Party on the ballot, and that's going to take some work. And I just, before I say this, I wanted to say that next Sunday is October the 11th, and I'll be paying tribute to Al Prentice Bunchy Carter of the Black Panther Party. It will be his birthday on October the 12th. But let's go back to the Green Party. This interview is, we wanted to talk about the fact that you and others are trying to get the Green Party on the ballot in Georgia and North Carolina.
Well, not just Georgia and North Carolina. What we're trying to do is we're trying to get it on the ballot in every state and the District of Columbia. It happens that in 19 states, there are serious ballot access barriers, usually in the form of petition signature requirements that keep anybody from anybody but Republicans and Democrats from getting on the ballot. If you are in Georgia and you want to run for Congress, you've got to get 20 to 22,000 signatures on a petition just to be a candidate for Congress. If you want to be a statewide candidate in North Carolina, or if you want to be, or if you want to run a slate of party candidates for a third party in North Carolina, you need 92,000 signatures on a petition. 92,000. That's 2% of the number of people who came out in the last election. In Georgia, you need 1% of the people who came out in the last election, which is 50,000. In Illinois, you need 25,000, and you got to gather those signatures in 75 days. In Indiana, you need 22,600. In Oklahoma, you used to need 48,000 signatures. Now they've reduced it to 24,000. Pennsylvania, you also used to need 48,000 signatures, and they've also reduced it down to 24,000. Let's see, and there are several other states like that. And the only parties who've ever gained statewide ballot access in Georgia and North Carolina have been the parties and the campaigns of millionaires, billionaires like Ross Perot. Or in North Carolina, a couple of friendly billionaires dropped dropped $500,000 on the Libertarian Party, of which they spent $350,000 to collect 100,000 plus signatures in order to get themselves on the ballot. Now, a People's Party shouldn't have to spend $300,000 to get on the ballot in a small and medium sized state like North Carolina. But there you go.
Bruce, could I cut you right now? I want to ask you Gus Hall and Jarvis Tyner's McCoy's brother, when they were running for president and vice president of the United States as members of the Communist Party, were they on the ballots in all states, or they just were on certain states?
I don't know for sure because I haven't done the research that far back. I know that the present wave of laws in the present election law in Georgia was passed in 1946. So okay. It's quite possible that socialists and or communists were on the ballot before this. And my understanding of the history is that these laws were passed to keep folks like that off the ballot.
Okay. I didn't mean to cut you, but I just want to get some clarity on that question. Okay. I cut you off. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So the deal is that this is how the two capitalist parties protect themselves against any competition. And it's really, really not feasible to, run people's candidacies inside the Democratic Party. And Lord knows it's not feasible to do it inside the Republican Party. Suppose that you were a sheriff and you were running on a platform against mass incarceration, and you ran in the majority black county, like, I don't know, Shelby County, Memphis, Tennessee, or Fulton County, which comprises most of Atlanta in Georgia, or someplace like that. Suppose you ran as a Democrat for sheriff on a platform against mass incarceration, and you won. Well, there would be some things that you'd have to do right away after you won. You'd say, well, I think I want to fire all the officers who are, misbehaving. And so, replace them and their supervisors, with people who are going to do the job the way I tell them to do the job. Number one. Number two, you'd want to get the people who are in your care decent medical care. Number three, you'd want to get them decent food. And number four, you'd want to get them educational programs. Now, if you tried to do just those four basic things as a county sheriff, and sheriffs all over the country have dominion over the jails, okay? If you tried to do those things for the people in those jails, then you would be running up against other prominent Democrats in your county and in your state who would block you or try to block you on the policy level. They try to keep you from moving the funds around, keep you from firing and hiring the people you have to fire and hire, keep you from getting rid of the contractors you need to get rid of. And then when it came time for you to run for re-election, they would run against you in primary elections. But yet and still, since you are still a member of the Democratic Party, then you would be expected to go out and get votes and lay them at the altar of the party each November. So it's really not feasible and not practical to run on a platform against the prison state, mass incarceration, privatization of education, or these illegal, unjust imperial wars as a Democrat, because you will be contradicting your president, your governor, your mayor, your legislative caucus, and all the other current elected officials of your party. You need another party. For the electoral system in the United States to have any relevance and any usefulness, you've got to have some other parties on the ballot. And so that's why the Green Party is trying to become a presence and get itself on the ballot in every state, including D.C. And it's going to be an incredible organizing task, but we think we're up to it. Nobody's been able to do this before. Even Ralph Nader, who was a damn fine organizer and had some damn fine organizers working for him, and who had a lot more money than we have, he didn't even try to get on the ballot in North Carolina, Georgia, Indiana, or Oklahoma. But we're going to do
it. Let me ask you this, Bruce. There's been talk about a black independent party, independent labor party. Is the Green Party coming from those two tendencies? And is the Green Party in the tradition of the independent black political party and the independent labor party?
Well, I got to wonder about the utility of an independent black party. I really do. I just don't see an independent black party forming and being of any usefulness. I mean, this is not a majority black country, and you've got to have white allies and allies of all colors here. The times in U.S. history when our people have made the greatest advances were the Civil War and the Freedom Movement. And in both those cases, we made those advances because we had white allies, okay? we wouldn't have, the slaves would not have been freed, okay, if a whole lot of white people hadn't took up arms, you see. And the freedom movement would not have been able to accomplish the limited amount that it had if it did not have white allies, including some white allies in power. So making an exclusively black political party, that's an awfully crooked road to an awfully straight place. I don't understand what the road would be for a black political party to travel or to plan to, you know, change the economic redistribution of resources, of education, and of housing, and of all the other things that we have to establish in this country.
Wouldn't you say the same thing about the labor front too?
I wouldn't say the same thing about the labor party.
The Latinos, the Africans, and the Asians might have some problem with labor on the race issue, the race question. The class question is another issue.
I was just reading a magnificent book by Karen Fields and Barbara Fields called Racecraft, in which they point out that race is an invention. Okay, race is an invention, and it's the invention of racists. You know, before people were enslaved and brought here, we didn't have racism, and we didn't even have races. The Europeans who went over to Africa and bought Africans, they didn't perceive as Africans as a race. These were just folks we could buy. This was slaves. We're buying slaves and we're transporting them over here. Race was not invented until we got to the New World, and they needed a justification for racism. They needed a justification for slavery. So, you know, basing a political party on this invention, I mean, I just don't know how you do that. I just can't see it. Now, on the other hand, the Labor Party does have some things to recommend it, but you can't have a Labor Party without a labor movement. and in the United States, the labor movement, and just the same thing, come to think of it, you could say that about a black political party. You can't have a black political party without a black political movement. And there ain't no black political movement. And you can't have a labor party without a labor movement. And there ain't no labor movement that's actually independent of Democrats. So, parties have to spring from something. Parties are how human beings conduct their political business. And they have to spring, from something. So I don't think there's a real basis for a black political party. And in this country, there with no labor movement, or with the labor movement tied hand and foot to bad leadership and to the Democratic Party, there's no possibility of a labor party either. So that's why I'm working in the Green Party for now.
How is that coming in terms of what type, who is going to be your candidates in the Green Party?
Well, the presidential candidate is a lady named Jill Stein, who's a doctor from Massachusetts. But we're doing and about to continue to be doing grassroots organizing in Georgia, North Carolina, and our Green Party in Georgia is pretty much going to be a red, black, and green party. Go figure. Because these are the people who are going to be joining it. These are the people who are going to be running it. These are the people who are going to be calling the shots. Georgia has the largest black population at 3.2 million of any state in the union. And African Americans are 31% of Georgia's population. So we're not number one in percentage of black population, but we are number one in sheer numbers of African Americans. And so Georgia is one of the key places to do this.
I remember when Cynthia McKinney ran, and the African People's Socialist Party supported Cynthia McKinney, and a lot of, I guess there is, let me ask you this way. How is the support coming from the African, the Latino, and the Asian people in America? How is that looking?
Well, support has to be earned. Support has to be cultivated. Support has to be organized. And, I was living here in Georgia when Cynthia ran as well. And I didn't get people.
All right, we're back with Mr. Dixon, and we were talking about Cynthia McKinney running for the Green Party in Georgia at that time.
Unfortunately, the campaign was not well organized or well put together. I introduced Cynthia at a meeting here. I was asked by the candidate to introduce Cynthia. I was not a member of the Green Party at the time and hadn't even met any of the Greens in Georgia at the time, and there were only 75 people in the room. I counted them. And for this to be the only hometown meeting for a presidential candidate a month before the election, and there to only be 75 people in the room, and these were all the movement ghetto people, too. These are the folks who come to every event in Atlanta. I know their faces.
Right.
You know, so,
right.
Yeah. You know, so that tells you that it was not well organized. And
all
I think
right,
we can do better.
The last question is, what would you like people to do? You're listening in the listeners of Uhura Radio.
Well, if those people are interested in trying to get a third party on the ballot, then I suggest that they look up the Green Party of the United States and see what they can do to get active locally. In that. Beyond that, I hope that people will just keep their eyes and ears open and study politics and study economics and study history and listen to some good music every now and then and love and take care of your children and your elders and also get involved in education, because one of the most terrible things that this administration is doing to us right now, and it's a Republican and a Democratic party thing, is they're privatizing public schools through charter schools and Common Core and a lot of these things. And so a lot of the grassroots organizing that we're doing is around control of the schools and preventing privatization. So they might want to get involved in what's called the opt-out movement, opting out of punitive corporate testing in their schools. And you can get on Google and find out about the opt-out movement and find out if there's a contact near you.
All right, Mr. Dixon, it's been a pleasure interviewing you, and we will definitely bring you back, and I encourage people to continue reading your you and Black Agenda Report. And I know quite a few people in Canada, I shouldn't say all of Canada, but especially in Toronto, who read the Black Agenda Report regularly, and Glenn Ford has been here a couple of times, and he has a nice following up here. And
yeah, I hope you get up there sometime too.
That might be. We can try to help make that possible.
Soon come, brother.
Soon come. I didn't know you were Jamaican, but
I married a Jamaican. Okay.
So did I.
So
we have that in common. Soon come. All right. And as another Jamaican, Marcus Garvey, would say, we will see you in the whirlwind. So take care. And I'd like to thank Lisa Watson for teching the show today and putting up with all these technical problems. I'm beginning to think it might have something to do with the state. And we will see you in the whirlwind. We're going to leave with Eric Dolphy and John William Coltrane and Eric Allen Dolphy Jr. and the Spiritual.
Radio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Sun is hot and plenty bright. Let's get on to business and get home tonight. Bid 'em in. Auctioning slaves is a real high art. Bring that young gal, Roy. She's good for a start. Bid 'em in. Get 'em in. Now here's a real good buy on about 15. Her great grandmammy was a die homie queen. Just look at her face. She sure ain't homely. Like Sheba in the Bible. She's black but comely. Bid 'em in. Gonna start at 3. Can I hear 3? Step up, gents, take a good look-see, cause I know you'll want her once you've seen her. She's young and ripe, make a darn good breeder. Bid 'em in. She's good in the field, she can sew and cook. Strip her down, Roy, let the gentleman look. She's full up front and ample behind. Examine her teeth if you got a mind. Bid 'em in, get 'em in. Here's a bid of 3 from a man who's thrifty. 325, can I hear 350? Your money ain't earning you much in the banks. Turn her around, Roy, let him look at her flanks. Bid 'em in. $350 is bidding. I'm looking for four. At $400 is a bargain, sure. Four is the bid, $450. $500 now look alive. Bid them in, get them in. Don't mind them tears, that's one of her tricks. $550 is bidding, who'll say six? She's healthy and strong and well equipped. Make a fine lady's maid when she's properly whipped. Bid them in. $650, don't be slow. $700 is the bid, gonna let her go. At $700 she's going, going, gone. Pull her down, Roy, bring the next one on. Bid them in, get them in, bid them in.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, the Toronto-based Bama, the bluesologist. And we, first of all, would like to thank everyone for supporting our fundraiser, which took place on September 20th. And I would like to say that our Black-owned and operated radio station, 96.3 FM, is coming to St. Petersburg, Florida in 2016. You have an opportunity to be part of raising resources towards this building process. Log on to blackpower96.org and donate meaningfully through our GoFundMe page. For further information, call 727-824-5700. That's 727-824-5700. Or you can catch us at email by going to info@ahuraradio.com. Thank you for your continued support. And we kicked off the show with the music of Ernie Spear and Oscar Brown Jr. Some reparations songs. That Spear came out with the Slavery Days in 1976, and Oscar Brown Jr. came out with Bitter Men in the early 60s, maybe as early as 1961. And at one time, he still had owed Columbia Records money for that particular song, if you can believe that or not. Oscar Brown Jr.'s daddy was Oscar Brown Sr., and he was a nationalist who started a movement called the 49th State Movement, and he wanted to create an independent African nation for black people inside the United States. We are going to be speaking with Ome Rahamtula in a few minutes, and few more minutes, we'll be speaking with Bruce Dickerson of Black Agenda Report, and Ome Rahamtula will be speaking about the situation at CHRY. They have been snatched off of the station, and people are trying to take them corporate, so we're going to deal with that. But we're going to be listening to some great music from Michelle and Dego Cello, Somme. We're going to listen to some music by G.C. Cameron and the Right Reverend Al Green. And we would like to thank Omali Ishitella and Archie Shepp for giving us Archie Shepp gave us the concept of diasporic music, and Chairman Omali Ishitella gave us the space to do diasporic music on Hula Radio. Let us listen to Michelle and Dego Cello.
Misunderstood. like anyone. Afraid I'll waste my life in worry about some foolish thing I've said or done.
Stuck.
brown, brown. My hair is fine. My lips still invite you, and my mouth still tastes like wine. I hope this European trick can get me a visa, not get me sick. What do they call me? A show. Stats to get steady, get you. Stats to get steady, day you. Stats to get steady, get you. Stats to get steady, day you. What do they call me? Woman. What do they call you? Woman. What do they call me?
Uhuru Radio.
Black power in black community.
And we're calling on all Africans. We recognize that as a people, we have tremendous skills in our community.
Informative.
So we've got to take all the skills that we've learned. You know, we've got to take all of our energy, and we've got to find a way to contribute to making sure that African people have a future.
No degrading lyrics.
Yeah, there ain't no future unless we build it now.
Finally, the station you've been looking for. Uhuru Radio.
Hey, Aisha, hold on. I'll walk with you. You know, this is going to be a great class.
I know. Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how I can exactly use these skills.
The Uhuru Movement.
The Uhuru Movement?
Yes, the Uhuru Movement. They offer great opportunities to utilize these type of skills in the most meaningful ways. I mean, writers, photography, graphic design, journalism, videography, video editing, even radio broadcasting.
Wow, sounds great. I'm assuming you have to be pretty advanced.
Not at all. I mean, although experienced is welcome, it's not mandatory. You know, the Uhuru Movement, they will train you. Log on and sign up today at uhurunews.com, where your skills are wanted and needed. Whether reporting on local news, writing for an international newspaper, or hosting your own radio show, the Uhuru Movement is the place for you. Do you have a desire to work in sales, marketing, or administration? Do you have the talent for audio engineering? Log on and sign up today, uhurunews.com. Not just explaining the world, but changing the world.
Thank you, brother. I will definitely follow up today.
And hopefully you'll become a member like I am.
All you need is faith to chances go thin. But there's no hiding place among the kingdom throng. Train coming, picking up passengers, coast to coast right here.
Say there's a king,
open the doors and borders. You don't need no ticket. You just.
There's a train coming. You don't need no ticket. You can just step on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesel humming. You don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord.
Oh, how about a round of applause for Linda Jones, ladies and gentlemen, on Papa?
There's a train coming. Don't need no bag. Don't need no ticket. All you got to do is thank the Lord.
Oh, what y'all talking about? Wanda Neal. Wanda, would you sing for me? Sing.
We all got to get ready.
Come on now.
For that train to Jordan. We don't need no tickets. We can just step on board. All we need is faith to hear that diesel coming. We don't need no bags, y'all. We can just thank the Lord.
Yeah. Wanda Neal Bobo. Give her a round of applause, Wanda.
All we got to do.
Just a little bit more chord, but I. Now we've got to do. All right. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I got to get over here some kind of way, huh? No. Mr. Ellis says no. Who?
No, we've got to do.
All right. A train coming.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. We just heard G.C. Cameron. No, we heard Al Green, G.C. Cameron, Somi, and Michelle Indigo cello. And joining us on the line from Toronto, Canada, is Omi Rahamtula of the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa, that is GRILA. And Omi is going to discuss the coup at CHRY-FM here in Toronto. Corporate forces have taken over CHRY, which is York University's radio station. And welcome to Diasporic Music on Uhuru, Ms. Rahamtula. How are you doing?
Thank you, Norman, for having me on today.
Well, we definitely want to keep on top of what is taking place with community radio, because it looks as if the state, the corporate forces, see community radio as a very positive force for the oppressed people, and they seem to be trying to block you. Well, they got rid of CKLN, and it's a similar thing is taking place all over the United States. What is the current situation with the struggle at CHRY?
Well, I mean, we haven't moved much. I mean, in terms of the volunteers that have been kicked out, we haven't moved much in terms of our struggle. You know, the summer was really hard to organize, but we have actually regrouped this past week and are trying to concentrate our efforts. So we are making some progress. In terms of CHRY, the radio station itself, I have no idea what they're up to. I try to avoid, but I do listen from time to time. It seems that they are on a mission to change the sound of the radio station to make it more corporate, to make it more mainstream. I've heard, for example, that they are taking out the fundraising drive. This has been a key part of any community radio station. Norman, yourself, you know, for years at CKLN, we would do community drives to get the listeners involved with funding of the station. I think it's probably a similar similar type of process with community.